recorded live.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Talking Twilight Zone.
And the doll was carved out of wood, a single block of wood.
Now who's joking?
See for yourself.
Sorry, I could have sworn.
It's probably some kid with one of those pocket radios. They sneak him in once in a while.
But I saw her move. At least I think I did.
Well, you know better now, don't you?
Yes, I know better now. Thank you. Sorry to have bothered you. Is she all right? I've been worried sick.
Would you like to see her?
Yes.
Be careful.
You're holding a piece of wood in your hand, Mr. Parks. A beautifully carved piece of wood.
Do you have to take her back?
I'm afraid so. It is museum property.
Open this door with the click of a mouse. Beyond it is a world of sound, thought, and opinion. In-depth discussions of television's greatest blending of science, superstition, imagination, and you're invited along. We'll be talking Twilight Zone.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Talking Twilight Zone. And I am here today, as usual. thank you. And I am here today with my wonderful co-hosts, Bobby, Robert, and Dave. And I'd also like to welcome some new guests here. We have T. Idaho. Applause, please. Applause. No applause. And of course,
they were debating.
And we have
warm out the first pause there, you know.
And we have Lou, and who we missed a couple weeks ago, who's back today, and Rick, of course. Welcome to everyone, and I'm so glad you're all here. Yes.
They got their third wind on that. Anyway.
Yes, and today we are here, and it's a beautiful day here in Conshohocken, in Pennsylvania. We're having 71 degrees and sunshine. It's lovely, and I hope everyone else is having a beautiful day, too. It's supposed to be a nice weekend here. And so it's a good weekend for a wonderful show, and we plan to do that for you. And, yes, today we are having a discussion on an episode 110, called Miniature, starring Robert Duvall. And Robert, would you like to give us that opening clip?
To the average person, a museum is a place of knowledge, a place of beauty and truth and wonder. Some people come to study, others to contemplate, others to look for the sheer joy of looking. Charlie Parks has his own reasons. He comes to the museum to get away from the world. It isn't really the 60-cent cafeteria meal that has drawn him here every day. It's the fact that here in these strange, cool halls, he can be alone for a little while. Truly alone. Anyway, that's how it was before he got lost and wandered in to the Twilight Zone.
Man, I go for the 60-cent lunches. Where is that at?
Back at a place called Horn and Hard Arts many, many years ago. That was one of those, what do you call them?
Anywhere in New York in the 50s and 60s and 40s.
Automats, right, Rick? Automats, yeah.
No, so anywhere. Not
anywhere.
Just Horn and Hard Arts, anywhere, yeah.
Get your meal, get a nice sandwich for 60 cents.
Yep.
Wow.
Actually, a sandwich with a side dish, too. Well, anyway, yes, today we are discussing Miniature. And, okay, I found this episode to be very intriguing and touching. I really did. I mean, as usual, it's a season 4 episode. It didn't need to be an hour long, but, you know, that's the hallmark of most of the season 4 episodes. And some of them are more tolerable to watch than others, you know, even with a few of the boring scenes thrown in here and there. Now, to me, Miniature was one of those tolerable episodes. I mean, the story was like some others that we've seen in the series. It deals with a character who's somewhat of a misfit. He looks for a means of escape through some sort of fantasy or supernatural world. And Charlie Parks' escape took the form of a dollhouse and its lovely little wooden inhabitant, Alice. So Charlie, you know, he was an oddball. He was a loner. But he was also very lonely. I think everybody can agree on that. He was a lonely man. He was in his 30s. He was still living with his mother, and she swore she didn't want to stand in the way of his happiness. But at the same time, I think it was very obvious that she had a pretty good hold on him. Now, one particularly interesting scene was the one in which Charlie's boss fires him simply because he doesn't fit in. Now, it's amazing what companies got away with back then. In this day and age, he could have filed a wrongful termination lawsuit. You know, I mean, you don't fit in, so you're out of here. Well, you better give me a better reason than that, pal, you know. But sadly, Charlie, he becomes so enamored by this doll in the dollhouse that he doesn't bother to look for another job. And he even rejects a job offer from his brother-in-law. I mean, he was his own worst enemy. Because he became so lost in Alice the doll of fantasy that he was willing to give up a steady paycheck and a steady real-life girlfriend. Now, granted, the girl his sister set him up with, she was a little forward and pushy, but at least she was real. She was a real person. But, you know, he was just in love with this doll. And I liked the dollhouse in the story. It was very quaint, you know, a little pretty dollhouse. And Charlie's fascination with it and the lady inside, that it was very intense. But he truly believed he was in love with Alice. And she seemed to come alive only for him. Well, she did come alive only for him. And his imagination even invented a maid and a suitor for Alice who also came alive in the house. And, you know, that's some wild imagination for sure. I mean, the guy really was imagining everything. I mean, even when the museum guard showed Charlie a sign saying that the doll was made of wood and was the only figure in the dollhouse, Charlie would not accept it. I mean, it was disturbing to see him talking to Alice through the protective glass without any concern for the fact that, you know, he could easily be hurt by the guard or anyone else that might wander by. But he was completely delusional. And those delusions, ultimately, they bought him a trip to the nut house. And when he tried to rescue the doll from her abusive suitor, and by smashing the glass in the front of the house. Well, you can't say that Charlie wasn't a noble gentleman, because he certainly was. He was trying to protect her and save her. And he was a bit of a nut.
Come on, he was as fruity as a nut cake.
He was as fruity as a nut. He was a nut, but he was a noble nut. he was a noble nut. He tried to save her, you know. He tried to save this little lady from this suitor that he had manufactured in his own mind. I mean, you know, he goes to the nut house, and William Wyndham, he plays the psychiatrist. And, you know, William Wyndham did a good job of playing the psychiatrist. But Charlie was slick enough to fool him into believing that he was cured of his delusions. And in the end, you know, Charlie sneaks out of his mother's house, returns to the museum, eludes the police, and he's magically transported into the dollhouse to live happily ever after with the woman he loves. The only one who knows what's happened is the museum guard, who sees Charlie in the dollhouse with Alice. And he certainly wasn't going to say anything, or else he might have been sent to the nut house himself, which meant that Charlie's mother and the rest of the search party were never going to find him. So, you know, my questions basically are, was Charlie really transformed into a miniature person, or was the guard having a delusion? I mean, was he a little crazy? I couldn't help but think about the season one episode, A Stop at Willoughby, in which mm-hmm. ad executive Gart Williams kept dreaming about a wonderful little town called Willoughby, and he became obsessed with living there. And in the end, he was finally transported there, but it turned out that he died during his final dream about the place when he jumped from the train. And, you know, then you have to wonder, was Charlie actually dead? Was Charlie dreaming the whole thing? Was the dollhouse a portal to some parallel universe? I don't know. But considering that Charlie wasn't very experienced or comfortable around women, I suppose a wooden one works out better for him. You know, I liked Charlie. I really liked his character. I felt sorry for him. You know, he was the character that I actually cared about.
When you said that he knew about him being in the dollhouse, then why is it he's got such a surprised look when he takes the cops in there and he's sitting in the parlor with her?
But he doesn't. He doesn't. He brings.
Yes, he does. He brings the two cops in and shows them the dollhouse.
Right.
And Charlie and Anne are sitting in the parlor together, and then they just pan over to him, and he's got a surprised look on his face.
But no, see, you're missing it. He brings the cops in. He brings the family, and they all walk by.
Right.
And they walk by, and they're looking for him. And then the guard looks into the dollhouse.
Yeah, right. The only one.
Yeah, he sees Charlie afterwards, and he smiles, and he says, and he thinks to himself, oh, that's where he is. No, he didn't see him in there until after the police went by.
And the guard ain't going to say anything, or they'll think he's crazy. So,
yeah, he's not going to say anything, but he didn't see Charlie in there until the cops went by. Watch it again. Watch that end part again. He let the cops go by and the family, and then he looked in afterwards.
Okay.
So that, yeah, he did not see them until afterwards.
Yeah, that is how it happened.
Yeah, trust me on this one, Rick.
Okay, well, I really have much intelligent to say about it too much anyway, because when we were watching it earlier today, Daphne goes to me, I don't get it. I can't help you.
Well, let Daphne watch it again. Well, I don't know. I mean, other than the usual filler scenes that can drag a bit, I mean, I like this episode. I always have because I enjoyed the acting, especially Robert Duvall's performance. The only scene that I did not care for is the one where Charlie watches Alice and her suitor leave the house, and he gets this goofy look on his face and smushes his nose up against the glass to get a closer look. I mean, come on, he's delusional, but he's not 8 years old. I mean, although his mother treats him like a kid. I mean, that was a dumb and unnecessary scene. I mean, he's smushing his nose up against the window, but... Oh, and by the way, speaking of his mother, that was played by Pert Kelton, and I have to say that she has one of the most grating voices I've ever heard. She was okay in this part, though. I mean, she was supposed to be annoying, but she did. I don't know if anybody knows this, but she played the original Alice Cramden back when The Honeymooners was a recurring sketch on TV's Cavalcade of Stars. So, I did not know that. I actually had to look that up about her. But
before Jane Meadows was
before The Honeymooners was an actual
yeah.
TV series on its own. It was a sketch on the Cavalcade of Stars,
and it was also in his own show too. And then it spun off on its own.
Right, Jackie Gleason show.
Yeah.
And of course, I think we all know Robert Duvall went on to have a wonderful acting career, and he's one of the finest actors in the business. And Jack McLean, he was the museum guard, and he seemed to like Charlie, and he also felt sorry for him, you know. And Barney Phillips played the unsympathetic boss who fired Charlie, and Phillips had much better roles in The Twilight Zone, Will the Real Martian Please Stand Up, and The Purple Testament. So, you know, I can overlook a few of the draggy filler scenes because I like the story and the acting, and I give it a 3 rating for good. And, T. Idaho, who wrote this episode? Oh, gosh, you know what? That's a good question. Who did write this episode?
Matheson.
Was it Matheson? Okay,
yeah.
Thank you, Bobby. Yeah, Richard Matheson read this one. Thank you, because I forgot. Robert.
He was obviously on the brink of insanity when he wrote it.
Shut up.
Especially that mustache-carrying villain there. I just waiting to hear the fanfare. You know, and how the old villain used to
decide.
Yes. You almost thought he was going to tie to the railroad tracks.
Railroad tracks, yeah.
Dick Dastardly.
Diamond will agree. Was the big villain in the silent era?
Dick Dastardly?
Simon Legree.
Oh, Simon Legree. Simon Legree. Yeah, that's right. Not Dick Dastardly. Oh, he was a cartoon character. That's right.
Yeah.
And Muttley. Dick Dastardly and Muttley. Yeah.
Yep.
Never mind. Go ahead, Robert.
And the Wacky Racers.
Wacky Racers.
Oh, yeah. Penelope. Yeah,
Penelope.
I remember her.
Penelope. Yeah. Oh, don't get me started. Come on.
Oh,
right.
My.
There you go.
Well, I'll tell you what, that does bring back memories. I remember when I was a kid watching that cartoon.
Yeah, me too. Never knew who was going to win.
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
That always made it interesting when you watched it. And it was during the time Scooby-Doo, I think, and all of them were on. So.
Banana Splits.
Oh, wait a minute. So Dastardly and Muttley were actually the Stop the Pigeon guys. Penelope.
Yeah, Dastardly and Muttley were bad guys.
Get that pigeon. Get that pigeon.
Get pigeon. Yeah, and they never won the race. Everybody won but them.
And Muttley would have that laugh. That Muttley
would laugh.
Yeah, but the villain for Penelope Pit Stop was that Paul Lynde character, and I forgot what it was called, the Claw or something. Remember?
No.
So it was like he had a dual role, and it sounded like it was voiced by Paul Lynde, but it wasn't.
Paul Lynde played Penelope Pitstop?
The villain. He played the villain who was chasing.
Oh, it's Ashley.
No, it was a Paul Lynde character. I forgot. It was like the Claw. It was like, I forgot. I watch it with my kids. He talks like Paul Lynde. It's like, ah, you know. I mean, I can't do a Paul Lynde impersonation. But there was a Paul Lynde character who was trying to catch or stop, or I don't know what they were trying to do with Penelope Pitstop, but he was always trying to trap her and kill her, and then those little midgets in the car would always have to save her.
Yeah, it was very reminding of the movie that came out, the Jalopies movie, where you had the villain in that movie too. Tony Curtis was in it.
I can't remember.
The Glorious Jalopies or something like that. I can't remember the title, but that's what the
Junkie Jalopies or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And they had a villain in that one too that was trying to get rid of all the racers in the race so they could win. So very much like that cartoon. What reminded me basically of this story is, you know, remember when we were kids and the Barbie playhouses and all that stuff back then. And
oh yeah.
I had a neighbor that used to have one of those playhouses and stuff, and you know, years later down the road, I remember seeing one in a museum that was made out of wood, a wooden dollhouse, which was kind of cool. And
some of them are beautiful.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And just the detail of the houses. And there's actually museums that have dollhouses in it where furniture.
Well, they have dollhouse museums. And some states have dollhouse museums that are beautiful.
And just the time they take into, putting them together and everything. The Amish is well known for making furniture and dollhouses and stuff like that.
Yes.
But that's more interesting than this episode was, unfortunately. Just talk about that. Like I said, again, as probably me and Bobby have said so far, episode was way too long for its own good, like most of the season 4 episodes are. And I compare this to chewing gum. As you chew, you gum around, and as time passes, it loses its flavor. That, unfortunately, is what happened with this episode. It's lost its flavor. 52 minutes was a waste of time, unless the acting ability of Robert Duvall was worth your time, which I could tell that some people did like Robert Duvall. I do, too. I remember him in Phenomenon and Sixth Day and
Godfather
movies. He started out in westerns.
Godfather
years ago as well. Yep, Godfather as well. So he's been in tons of movies and he's a great actor. I like him. I like watching him. This story, it was very much life like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're gonna find inside. Type character. And that's why he was reminding me of when I was watching his character when he would communicate with people. And actually, that is the story I like. There's actually two stories in this. There's like an A and B plot of the story. And you got the one where we have the story of the dollhouse going on with Alice and the characters and everything. Then you have the other story with the family and his sister and the trip and the stay at the sanitarium and the conversation with the psychiatrist was yawn-worthy at best. And, you know, even though I recognize most of the actors in the episode, I thought that Duvall's performance stood out in this.
Absolutely.
And also very much remind me of the night at the museum. Unfortunately, Robert Duvall's no Ben Stiller, to be honest about. I liked that movie. If I had a choice between this episode and that movie, I would rather watch that movie because I'm a big Robin Williams fan too, and he was great as Teddy Roosevelt.
I like Ben Stiller too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's great as the museum guard. But like I said, just I like the that plot better than family plot that was going on during that time. I was very disappointed in it. I mean, the main plot bored me to death, whereas, you know, the backstory kept my interest. I didn't care that Charlie was a mama's boy. I could care less about his family and his sister and all that stuff. Like I said, I liked where he was at the museum, and then the story going on in the dollhouse interested me more, this story itself. So
it was a filler that was bad, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And that hurt a lot of these season 4 episodes is the filler. And just trying to stretch out something that's only, you know, 25 minutes long to 52 minutes is just ridiculous. And I'm so glad that when we get back and get over to season 5, we're back to the 25-minute format again. That's a lot better. And by the way, if people don't know, MeTV, I think it's once, is showing the season 4 episodes because Julie's been telling me about it and catching them when they air on MeTV. So, unfortunately, I wouldn't want to rewatch them again. So, but what was amazing, very much reminded me of an amazing story, season 1 episode titled The Doll.
Steven Spielberg.
It had John Lithgow in it. And it was basically about a man that falls in love with a doll. And it won him, John Lithgow, a Daytime Emmy for Outstanding Guest performer in a drama series. That was back in 85. And by the way, the story was written by Richard Matheson. That one is a...
I remember that episode, and it's a shame, you know, they show all this crap on TV, and they show the same stuff over and over, and they never show reruns of The Amazing Story, and I don't know if that's something, I mean, I know Spielberg wrote those, and, I mean, not, but produced those, but I wonder why they never show that. Is that, like, something to do with copyright? Is it something to do with, you know, just a... some kind of a battle between, you know, how CBS is always saying you can't show this, you can't show that, you can't put things on YouTube. I mean, it's just a shame that we never see Amazing Story because they were great. Some of them were really great.
I think the first two seasons are out on DVD, if I remember correctly. But
every
I
now and then,
enjoyed it.
Sci-fi shows it.
They do? They show Amazing Story?
Yes.
Because I really like them.
But that's like every once in a blue moon I've seen
it.
Yeah,
I've never seen them. Yeah.
I think it is a copyright issue. I'm not sure.
I thought it was available on Netflix. I remember it streaming on Netflix maybe a few years ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I remember seeing a few episodes. I saw the Kevin Costner one with the balloon, with the plane, and he draws the balloons.
Oh, I really like those episodes.
Oh, the animated hair piece that would kill lawyers. Remember that episode?
Oh, yeah.
Also, on the wiki page, it says that there was a lawsuit, talking about this particular episode, Miniature. It said because of a lawsuit, this episode was not included in the syndication package for Twilight Zone and was only finally re-aired in 1984 as part of the Twilight Zone Silver Anniversary Special.
That's right.
And for this showing, the Dollhouse fees... scenes were colorized in an early demonstration of the process.
Yeah, right, little Ted Turner there.
Aaron, yeah, but yeah, it's just a shame that they have to go through these disputes and copyright things because, you know, there's so many good shows and episodes that don't get seen because of that. When you saw them on Netflix, Lou, I probably didn't have Netflix at that time, but I would love to see some of them again.
Wow. Well. Here's a quick promo for Amazing Stories here.
Signal from another planet. Come here quick!
Oh, yes, it's coming!
Premiering tomorrow from executive producer Steven Spielberg. Amazing Stories.
Promo for first season for 85. The one I remember most is Christopher Lloyd, and I think that was in season 2. Remember correctly, where he plays a school teacher.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, remember that one?
Yeah, that's great. That was a good one.
It's not worth losing your head over. But.
Great, yeah.
Oh, they were good episodes. I miss them. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking it up now. They still have them on Netflix.
They
have 2 seasons worth. Yeah.
Cool.
45 episodes.
I was surprised it was canceled as soon as it was. Because didn't it only go 3 seasons? Or was it 4?
I don't know. I can't remember. I mean, Netflix only has 3 seasons, so.
I think it was canceled after 3 at the most, but I was very surprised because I enjoyed watching it. I thought they were great episodes, and, you know, I thought, why would they cancel something this good, you know?
Wasn't there an episode with Charlie Sheen in it when he was a kid? Wasn't he in a World War II pilot or something like that?
That I don't remember. I don't remember. He might have been. I don't remember that. Bear
Go
fan
ahead,
Ron's
Rick.
Here. Bear fan Ron's here. Hi, Bear fan Ron.
What were you going to say, Rick?
Well, it's just my personal opinion. I thought some of the season 3 stories were eh.
What the
Probably because they lost focus.
Amazing stories.
Stories, yeah.
That happens all the time. They get further in and the stories get stale.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to go ahead and finish this up here with, of course, we have a Doctor Who episode, series 6, episode 9, called Night Terrors. And it's about a little boy that summons the doctor, and he comes to help him with his fears. And it includes dolls and dollhouse in the cupboard in this one. Here's the trailer for that and a short little clip.
Ring around the rosy, a pocket full of posies.
Tell me about George.
When he's scared to death of everything.
Quintet, again.
George, you have to face your fears. You have to face them now.
See these eyes. They're old eyes. And one thing I can tell you. Monsters are real. We should let the monsters gobble him up. I'm not just a professional. I'm the doctor.
What's that supposed to mean?
It means I've come a long way to get here, Alex. A very long way. George sent a message. A distress call, if you like. Whatever's inside that cupboard is so terrible, so powerful, that it amplified the fears of an ordinary little boy across all the barriers of time and space.
Hey?
Through crimson stars and silent stars and tumbling nebulas like oceans set on fire. Through empires of glass and civilizations of pure, through a terrible, wonderful universe of impossibilities. You see these eyes. They're old eyes. And one thing I can tell you, Alex. Monsters are real. You're not from social services, are you?
No, not. And I loved this doctor's speeches. Rang as a Akatan this year. I loved the couple speeches he gave in that one. But anyway, that's an example, samples of Dolls and Dollhouses. 1.5 out of 5. Much better stuff than what this episode was. And over to you, Bobby.
Well, I'll say one thing for this episode. It helped me set a new record for myself. So far, I've fallen asleep while watching every single season 4 episode. But yesterday, I managed to fall asleep 4 times. I fell asleep in every single act. So that's a new record for me. I'll probably never top it. I absolutely have nothing to say about this crap at all, because there's just nothing to say. Robert's already said everything that I was thinking anyway. And nothing happens, and you know from the minute it starts that nothing's going to happen is obvious. I can't relate to it at all because I had a sister who was 10 years older than me, and when I was 2 and 3 and 4 years old, she had dolls that she was very fond of, but she never had a dollhouse, so I never really had any exposure to that, so I couldn't go crazy. There's nothing going on in here at all except for Robert Duvall, of course, and he is one of the great actors of our time, and by the way, he is not only still alive, he'll be 83 years old the first week in January, but he is still acting. He's got 2 movies coming out, and I always admire anybody who can get to be 83 years old and still stay active and still stay alive. And still works. So that really is amazing. He started in the late 50s. If you go to the Internet Movie Database and you look at his record, he's got about 55 years of acting, and he's been in just about every single well-known TV series that ever existed. I mean, it's a dazzling list. You can look at it and go, oh, yeah, I remember that, and I remember that, and I remember that. The same year that he made this awful thing in The Twilight Zone, he was in my other all-time favorite series, The Fugitive, in one of the classic episodes of that series called Never Wave Goodbye, a 2-part story. And he was very good in that, and he actually had something to do and some acting to do. So I more remember that. But, this is early in his career. He's been an actor for about 5 years. And so I can excuse him for that, but it really is a disgraceful, awful episode, and it just goes on and on. And it seems like season 4 will never end. We're almost to the end. We've got one more episode to do reviews on at our group, thank God.
Thank goodness.
Yes, thank goodness for that. And, of course, it is just about the worst one imaginable, but we'll get to that later. But as far as this radio show is concerned, I looked at it where we were way behind compared to the group. We won't finish up talking about season 4 until the middle of March. That's pretty shocking. So we're looking at
about 10 episodes behind.
Yeah. An entire winter of talking about season 4. Now, there are one or two that I don't mind, so there will be some moments when it's not so horrible. But this is just absolutely awful, and somebody posted, I think at IMDb or somewhere, about Richard Matheson and about how he wrote this right before he lost his mind. He was close to going over the edge. So maybe this drove him there, because I know it almost drove me there. And it's just awful. I mean, watch these episodes, and Robert is so right. They just crawl along, and it's hard to believe that less than an hour could seem so long. It's just amazing when you've got absolutely nothing happening whatsoever, and that's what you got in this episode. So I just kept falling asleep, and every time I woke up, the same thing was happening. It was just a lot of talk and a lot of him staring into a dollhouse, which is not terribly exciting.
Wasn't that bad.
I gave it I know you liked it, and that's fine. Robert's too kind. He gives things a 1.5. I gave it a 0, and I was being way too kind with that.
Oh, God, zero.
So I never want to see this again, and I don't intend to ever watch it again.
A 0. It was so bad you gave it a 0. My God, even for Robert Duvall's acting, it deserved a 1 at least.
No, because he just trashes his career by being in something like this.
Touch.
It's miserable. So I gave it a 0. At least on our next show, we have something at least worth talking about. Well, I'm not crazy about Printer's Devil, but it certainly it's absolutely fabulous compared to this. But that, I don't know what to do without saying much. Anyway, I'll stick with my 0. It's just plain awful.
Pishaw. All I have to say, pishaw.
Well, Ron agrees with you, Bobby, so...
Good, I appreciate that.
Well, Ron, pishaw to you. I didn't say piss off, I said pishaw. P-S-H-A-W. But anyway. All right, Dave, what do you have to say?
I say this is Bobby's best TV series ever.
What, The Twilight Zone? It is one of my favorite TV series.
Okay, I wouldn't like to listen to people who hate the show then.
Oh, I've raved about plenty. Oh, listen, you should go read my reviews at the group. I've got plenty of raves in there.
Well, I told them that it's seasons 1 through 3. You gave me plenty of high ratings for those.
And in season 5, which we haven't done yet, 2 of my all-time favorite episodes are in there. So I do occasionally have something nice to say.
Well, I suppose 2 out of a few hundred is not bad. Anyway, let's not get distracted. There wasn't a great deal
so easy
to say
do
about,
on this show.
Yeah. Season 4, of course. This is episode 110, so we've had 110 episodes. I don't know how... The 21st of February 1963, it first aired. Few things that warrant comments, because I don't think you can comment on the story too much, because it's as you say, from the very first section where he goes into the museum. And by the way, what a museum. You go through an area where there's African tribe helmets or tribe masks, into an Egyptian room, and from the Egyptian room into a Victorian room. Strangest layout I've ever seen of a museum.
Just don't go up the steps when you got a bunch of women coming down, remember?
There were some funny little notes that caught my mind. I mean, for instance, when the boss summons in and he's going to give him the sack, he says to him, you're like some kind of wind-up toy. So there's a clue there, isn't there? The people in the office almost think he's sort of, you know, so wooden and so stiff, and the girl on the park bench tells him to loosen up, and it's almost as though he's predestined to be, made of wood himself. Sort of Pinocchio in reverse, isn't it, really, when you think about it? The other thing is, one of the scenes where he's back at home and his mother's talking and this and that, and he says something like, it's all right, mother. I thought, blimey, that just sounded like the guy out of Psycho when he was having conversations with his mother. You know, when you see the outside of the house and you see the curtains and you hear him saying, it's all right, mother. It was very, very, very... it reminded me of that. It's strange the way they decided to do the way that the puppet, not the puppets, the people in the toy house moved, because it was not, they weren't moving like wooden marionettes, although there was a sort of a gait, I suppose, to them, as though they might be on strings or something. But it was a rather funny way, and then they changed, as you said, when the man came back into the house. So he obviously didn't, I'm not sure whether he lived in the house or whether, you know, he'd come back from the pub or his club or something. But, you know, it was certainly mustache twirling at that point. And it seemed to change.
He was just a suitor. He was just someone who's, you know,
but the point is, one of the great things that I think Robert will agree with me is, like on Doctor Who, when they do have aliens or they do have creatures, they take particular care in working out a way that they move. So, you know, the Sontarans will always move in one way, Scarecrows will move in another, and so on and so forth.
Excluding Hyde, of course, Dave. Tall Sontarans, short Sontarans, two doctors.
Oh, yeah. Two doctors, indeed, yeah. But in this, they were sort of doing this, like, marionette move, and then the scene where the chap comes back, it went into silent movie mode, to my mind. You know, it wouldn't have surprised me if you saw a shot of railway tracks at that point. You know, it was...
Waiting for an eye to go, boo!
Yeah.
Boo!
So,
this
was one where the story just didn't take... This could have worked quite well as a 25-minute... I agree with you, Lynn, by the way, about that that Wally Cox moment where he has his nose against the glass. It seemed out of character, because the whole point was this man had no funny bone whatsoever, did he? I mean, it just seemed strange to me.
Yeah, almost childish. Yeah.
Yeah. I'd probably give it 2, and again, that's probably for Robert Duvall, who, by the way, one of my favourite films that he was in was one of his later films, actually, called Open Range, where he plays an aging cowboy. That's a great film if you haven't seen it.
Wasn't he also Loathsome Dove? Was he in that series?
Oh, he's been old. I mean, he was in. He was fabulous in The Godfather. Of course, the adopted son who got overlooked. He played that brilliantly. His loyalty to the family, even though he was disabused. He was fabulous in that. He was probably one of the best actors in that. I mean. The one that I can't remember is
James Caan.
I mean, Robert Duvall acted James Caan off the screen, I thought, in the scenes that they were together. So I do admire him as an actor, but I'm searching around for good things to say. Bobby, I do think that, but I would certainly give it still 2 out of 5. For his performance, if not anybody else. Oh, and the chap who played the Doctor,
William Wendell.
Seen him in quite a lot of things, and I've liked him in lots of things as he's been. But I've had trouble pinning down why I like him so much. I've looked at his resume, and he's been in all sorts of things. And I'll put his wiki page link in the room. But he's one of those likeable actors, you know, character actor, but he always seems to sort of live in the thing. Was it Gunsmoke he was in, or something like that?
Well, he was in the episode Five Characters in Search of an Exit.
Ah, right.
Yeah,
right.
He played the major who was trying to get out of the barrel that all the dolls were in, and he was the star of the Farmer's Daughter. With Inger Stevens.
Right, and that's another thing that reminded me of the After Hours one, where in actual fact that was in reverse, wasn't it? Actually, it's the same story. We start with a woman in the shop, and we end up with a mannequin. Here we start with a man in an office, and we end up with a doll in a house.
Yeah. Mhm. You're right.
So you can tell I'm searching around for good things to find. And coming up a little bit short.
Well, you found some good things. And as far as Robert Duvall in The Godfather, he was such a contrast to the other characters. because he was the good, gentle, he was a lawyer. He played the lawyer.
Yeah.
You know, and he was very good and gentle, and he was actually the voice of reason most of the time. You know, you have Michael Corleone, and you have who was Sammy and Fredo, and you know, and he was always the voice.
You mean Sonny?
Sonny, yeah. Sonny, thank you, Sonny, yeah. Sonny, and Michael, and Fredo, and all. But Robert Duvall, he was the attorney, you know, for the family, and he was the adopted son, sort of, you know, and you know, he played the voice of reason most of the time. He was a total contrast to the rest of the family, and he did it so well.
Excellent, yeah,
yeah.
Okay, Lynn.
All right, and now Rick.
I agree with Bobby. It was boring. I didn't fall asleep, but it was, and Robert, it was boring. I don't know. Like I said, you know, or like it's been said, I should say, too much filler. The suitor, quote unquote, was too much like the old Simon Legree for me. You know, too cliched. Duvall's acting was all right. Other than that, I'd give it like a 2 just because of Duvall's acting.
Well, he basically made the episode. I mean, if it wasn't for him, that episode wouldn't have worked.
And like I said, as we watched it, Daphne turned to me and goes, I don't get it.
A dog's point of view, yes.
I think it comes down to the story was okay. It's just the execution of it was terrible. That's what it comes down to.
This is an episode like Lynn said about, oh, God, I forget the episode now, where I can see the director going, do something.
No, more like, take your time. We got 10 minutes to go.
True.
So you give it a
walk test. Across the floor slowly.
So you give it a 2, Rick?
Yes.
All right. Okay, so we've got a 2s and 1s and a 0, of course. And Lou?
Okay. Well, you know, I would say the first half of this episode was kind of dry. I agree with everyone. At that point, I was kind of leaning towards like a 1.5. I mean, I liked Duvall, but his performance was a bit one note for that first half. And then for me, something switched around the midpoint of that episode. And I think it started when Barbara Barry's character offers like, she gives him like a paper. You know, she basically says that Robert Duvall's character needs a woman. He needs a woman in his life. That's what he needs. So then he gives her this paper. He says, no, go to this address and just, you don't have to call. You don't have to let them know you're coming. Just go there and take out this girl. She's nice.
She's already being paid.
Yeah, exactly what I said. Oh, my God, his sister is sending him to a bordello. And all of a sudden, the way I started thinking about this episode was completely different. And then I found it completely amusing after that. So I think he's sending her to a bordello. Next scene, he's in the park with this buxom blonde in a tight dress. And I'm like, oh, my God, she is a prostitute. Further validated when she starts coming on to him. Come on, hug me. Hold me close. Let me rest my head on your shoulder.
He pushes her off the bench.
And then even after that, she's like, okay. And then she slaps him. And it's like, it started getting really absurd. It's like, this episode is so bad that it's actually good. And so then you have the scene where he goes back to the museum, and that's when the suitor comes in, and all of a sudden it becomes a silent picture with all of them overacting, and he raises the cane, and he knocks the maid out, and he grabs the girl. She faints. He's going up the stairs, and he breaks the glass. So we're treated to a silent movie there. Then the next scene is that we see him in the psychiatrist's office. And for some reason, Robert Duvall is wearing a bathrobe. I think it was supposed to be a straitjacket, but it looked like a bathrobe. And for me, I'm just constantly smiling at myself as I go through this episode. And then later and then the brother-in-law becomes this kind of comic foil. You know, he's cracking his knuckles, and then all of a sudden the psychiatrist is concerned. Hey, I'm curious about your knuckle cracking. Then the brother gets all kind of self-conscious about himself. And, you know, that joke is played out through the episode too. And then Robert Duvall's change of character is so over the top, and yet nobody notices. He's completely happy. He's completely gleeful. He's like, he's all happy, happy, happy. I mean, it's a bit over the top, and it's like, and you all know that he's not, it's an act, but it's like so obvious that it's an act, but then no one can see it. He gets on the bed. He lets his mother take off his shoes this time and loosen his socks. And it just becomes really funny at that point. I mean, for me, the whole episode just, I was just amused as I was watching this episode progress. So, you know, and it ends as we all expect. You know, he ends up in the dollhouse. And you know, it's a predictable episode. The way it starts, you know, it is kind of dry. I think if you look at it completely straight, yeah, it's not a good episode. But for me, all those little touches, I mean, in a weird sort of way, and I don't believe that the people who made this film did it deliberately, but it seemed like they were doing a caricature of their own episodes. It's like, we know this is a Twilight Zone episode you're all familiar with, so we're going to add all these little humorous little scenes in there for the audience. And I doubt that they actually were doing that, but that's how I ended up looking at that.
Matheson does not write comedy.
Oh, he doesn't?
No.
It just seemed like a caricature of itself that last half hour, and I have to admit, I was amused as I was watching that second half. It's kind of like those, you know, when they say something is so bad that it's good. And that's what happened for me in this episode. So now, I, you know, originally if it had gone straightforward and didn't have any of those little bits, I probably would have just given it a 1.5. But I have to admit, I was amused halfway in the latter half of that episode. So I'm going to give it 2.5.
Because he went from acting like a nut to all of a sudden fooling everybody and seeming perfectly normal. Oh, yes, I'm cured. Oh, yes, I know she's a wooden figure. Oh, yes, I understand that now. I'm going to go home, and I'm going to let my mother take my shoes off, and I'm going to be just fine. And then he sneaks out the window. He's just hysterical. I mean, yeah, you have to love it. And Bear Fan Ron here says, great watching it if you're drunk or high. Yes, I agree. Yeah, it's one of those.
Say that about many a shows.
Yeah.
Or movie, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. If you're drunk, you're really going to kick out of it. We're kind of across the board on this. We've got zeros and ones and twos, and I gave it a 3. So I liked it. I mean, I'd say that.
You gave it a 4.
I didn't give it a 4.
Mm-mm. She gave it
did
a 3.
I give it a
4? I thought she said 4. All right.
No, 3. No, I give it a 3.
Okay.
3 for good. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's not excellent. It's not excellent because the filler is a little rough, but overall I gave it a 3 for good because I just liked Duvall and I thought it was very good. I liked the way he went from crazy to normal to crazy again, and you know, the ending of course was predictable, but I thought it was kind of cool. So
I like shrimp, barbecues, honey.
Right. stupid is.
It happens.
All right. Well, okay. We're good on this one. We're across the board here. But, yeah, this was fun. Okay. Bear Fan, what did you give it? You did not give me a rating.
He gave it a 0. Remember, he agreed with Bobby.
Oh, that's right. He agreed with Bobby. Yeah. That's right. I'm sorry, Bear. And T. Idaho, I'm sorry I forgot what you gave it. Type in your rating, please.
I'm looking so forward for a couple of weeks for the next episode. I really, really am.
Idaho?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right. Wait a minute. Maybe he did give a rating earlier. Wait a second.
You know, I'd like to also mention that William Wyndham was in that Star Trek episode, Doomsday Machine, where he played like a Starship captain who completely lost it.
Played Decker.
Really
yeah.
Great.
Yeah, he played a commander.
Yeah, Commodore Decker, who ended up being the father of Matt Decker from the first movie.
I don't remember that.
It was really he played like he became insane, basically, but he played it really brilliantly, I thought. It's a really remarkable episode.
I don't remember that one. I don't know why. All right, well, I think T. Idaho gave his rating earlier, but he's not giving it now. So I think he gave it a 2, but I don't remember. All right, so we're good here. All right, and now what we have coming up in 2 weeks on October, is it 13th, Robert, 12th or 13th? I think it's a 13. Let me check.
12.
We have The Printer's Devil. Starring starring the incomparable Burgess Meredith.
Yay,
Burgess Meredith. So we are very much looking forward to that one, and I hope I'll see that. All right. So Bear Fan and Tiago and Rick and Blue and everybody, I hope I'll see you in 2 weeks for Printer's Devil with Burgess Meredith. You have to be here for Burgess. He's expecting you. He's dead, but he's still expecting you. Yes, wonderful, wonderful actor. And
you know what you are? You're a bomb. You always will be a bomb.
Rocky.
Get in there, Rocky. Fight.
Women weaken knees. Women weaken knees. Remember that scene from Rocky? Women weaken knees. Rocky was allowed to be around any women. But yes, fabulous actor and fabulous, well, I won't say fabulous episode, but good episode. So we will get back to that in 2 weeks. And I hope everyone else has a wonderful rest of the weekend. And thank you all for being here. And we'll see you then. October 12th, 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Printer's Devil. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye, all.
Bye.
And now, Mr. Serling.
Some rather special ingredients to a bizarre brew served up next on the Twilight Zone. An oddball printing press, an editor with a stringer from the lower regions. There are just a few as we bring you Robert Sterling, Patricia Crowley, and special guest star Burgess Meredith in Charles Beaumont's Printer's Devil.
What's the matter?
Matter?
Why did you quit?
Finished.
Why would a man with your talent want to work for a hick paper like the Courier?
Call it a challenge. Oh, Miss Benson, are you impressed?
No, I'm amazed.
It's understandable. Well, I must confess that this is not my true vocation.
It isn't?
No, I'm a reporter.
Oh.
You know, some people have a green thumb. I have a green nose. Wherever there is news, this old nose smells it.
Well, I'm afraid there isn't that much news to smell around Dansburg, Mr. Smith.
There will be.